Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Scientology Fair Game. We have a very special guest with us today. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Of course, Mikey. Would you like to... By the way, I usually say hi, Mikey.
I know you do, and I say hi, Lily.
Yes, I got excited because Sarah's here.
I know. Yes, Sarah is a very special guest. Like all of our guests are very special, but she's particularly special. Sarah is a Canadian TV and movie actress and a voiceover artist, but is probably best known for being featured in the recent HBO documentary series, The Vow. And she was a member of Nexium and escaped with her life. And has lived to tell the tale and has, in fact, even written a book about the subject called Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life. We, of course, spoke earlier with Mark Vicente, and Mark Vicente, if you've watched The Vow, had a lot to do with Sarah becoming involved in the first place, and then Mark and his wife, Bonnie, had a lot to do with Sarah ultimately leaving. And I'm really thrilled to be talking to Sarah on air here. We have spoken before, FaceTime before, sort of a little mini support group of ex-cult members that we have.
Yeah.
And Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. Your crusade to bring the truth about Nexium is invaluable and has helped so many people. Yeah. And hopefully this will be another step toward helping not just victims of Nexium, but victims of all cults and high demand control organizations, or even people who are in abusive relationships. So Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I know I said this to you when we first FaceTimed, and I know Mark has said it to you both as well, but what you both did in exposing Scientology was such a roadmap for Mark and I to know that you could wake up, recognize your part in something, be vulnerable enough to come forward and talk about it was so instrumental to say, okay, they're doing it. And also, especially for you, Leah, as like a woman and an actor, I'm like, okay, she's doing it. I can do it too. Just like, I don't know if we would have done it had you not. We may have gone back to our lives, and who knows? It's hard to say, but it just to have you guys as role models was really helpful for us in so many different ways. And it means a lot to have this, you know, to have this time with you. That's why I was saying I've been wearing this sweatshirt, Don't Be Culty, for so many years, hoping to say this to you, to your face. Like, what you did was so brave, and you shone the light for us, and now we can do it for others, and keeps going forward. So thanks for being trailblazers.
Thank you. And it's the same to you. I mean, I said this to Mark, and I wanted to say it to your face. Very courageous. Takes a lot of guts to do what you guys did, what you continue to do. And if I could mention this here, you're going to be launching a podcast with your husband, right? Called A Little Bit Culty.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is amazing, because there are a lot of people, and I'm sure you will agree with me, there are a lot of people who should be speaking up, not just in our cult and mm-hmm. other cults. And you could say the same for our current political situation. and I think that people feel, what can I do? Especially as actresses, you know, it's a line, right? Where I don't know if you had this, Sarah, but I certainly did. And I still do get this. You could tell me, but I get, you know, do you want to be acting, or do you want to be, you know, known for this thing? And I'm like, yeah, I'd rather be known for this thing, because the acting part of it is my, I love acting. I love making people laugh, but it's very hard to, what we do is it's why we got into cults in the first place, right? It was like, I always wanted to be an actress because I like to move people. You know, I wish I would, if I could be a singer, I'd be a singer, but I can't sing. But I like to move people. And, you know, making people laugh was like the second best thing. But I always wanted to do something more than just that. And I'm not putting anybody down who does just that. But we got into a cult, and Mike, you could, and I think anybody who's in a cult will agree, you don't get into a cult because you think, because you're an asshole, because you're, because you're just have nothing better to do with your time, because you're a fucking loser, because you're not intelligent. You get into
a cult. I want someone to take all my money and abuse me. That's what yes, please count me in. Right. I'm signing up today.
Right. You get in because there's something inside of you that wants to make the world a better place. You want to leave your stamp on the world in a positive way. And that is why people join cults, is because they believe they're part of a bigger purpose, the sense of community. And it's that purpose, I think, that drives everything, right? We're making people better. We're making people cause of their own lives. We're going to make a saner planet for not only ourselves, but for future generations. I mean, what comes along with it is not just some crazy shit. It's really comes from a place deep inside. And so the acting is not just about, like, it's hard to just go back to the acting when you feel the sense of purpose of why you started this, come back, and now you're on the right side of it.
100%. I honestly couldn't agree more. The difference between you and I, though, is that you actually had a full career when you made this choice. I had I was a working actor, but I'm not famous by any means. In fact, the only thing I've actually been noticed for is for The Vow, which I'm playing myself, or am myself. Right. But still, you know, I'm still auditioning. And sometimes I look at it and go, well, this was going to take a lot of time. And I have the podcast and, you know, and this is, it's just way more fulfilling for me, 100%. Yes. If I never acted again, I would be sad. But I also, you know, feel way more passion and purpose in being an activist and helping others and shining that light. And if we can do both, great. I mean, sure. But I'll tell you, one of the biggest compliments I can get in this field is when people say, oh, wow, you're like the Leah Remini of NXIVM. And I'm like,
I agree.
Totally take that. Listen, that's like the highest compliment.
Listen, I don't disagree. I mean, I think what you guys have done amazing. And I remember watching The Vow and writing Mike going, I'm so jealous of them. Here I am watching you go through this pain and the being fair gamed and your lives being destroyed because, you know, they have a similar policy of going after people and attempting to destroy their lives when you're speaking out and speaking the truth. But I told Mike, I said, you know, they're getting somewhere. They're actually getting somewhere. They're actually putting this, they're going to succeed in putting this criminal away. And we haven't been able to do that yet. And so
I believe you will. I absolutely do. And even if you haven't done that yet, you've helped so many people in A, recovery, and then B, alerting them to the red flags. Like, how many people haven't joined because of you? You'll never know that.
Right. No, it's
ever.
No. And we have to be reminded, like, honestly, there's no new people getting into Scientology today. That's
great.
The good news. Right, Mike? I mean, you can honestly say,
I think
nobody,
you guys can take credit for that.
Little Seriously. Bit, you know, because there have been people before us, you know, there was many people, you know, before it was like, okay to go after Scientology, people were really being destroyed. And there wasn't a lot of information. You had to go get a newspaper and do things like that. There wasn't information available,
right,
like there is now, right? And then many people, like, there were many blogs before us and websites before us, and going clear really did pave the way, I think. You know, watching, you know, the Time Magazine, another one, Time Magazine, they went after them. They ended up losing. And I think that over time, you know, but those things are in history. And so people don't really know, like, oh, Scientology's just sent, how many lawsuits they had going against HBO, Mike, when they were going clear.
Well, they didn't file any lawsuits. They sent numerous threat letters and put like took out full page ads in the LA Times and the New York Times and that sort of stuff. But
right.
that by then the Scientology filing lawsuits against media organizations was a thing of history because the Time magazine case basically put an end to that.
Right. I want to go into the, I think what you're doing is amazing. You're doing a, not only are you doing a podcast called A Little Bit Culty. When can we hear that, by the way, and where?
Well, we recorded our first episode yesterday, and we're going to be launching it hopefully March 1st if we get all our technical ducks in a row. I'm trying to license the song for our teaser that I love, and that's
yes.
taking a little bit longer than I thought because I've never licensed a song before.
Awesome.
But yeah, hopefully March 1st, and it'll be on all the platforms. And,
okay.
Yeah. Obviously, great. I would love for you guys to be guests once I get Anytime. Under my belt.
Anytime.
Thank you.
And I wanted to also talk about what you're heading up is you have a mission called I Got Out. And this mm-hmm. is to inspire survivors of cultic abuse to tell and share their stories, creating an online community dedicated to unflinching honesty. And you guys, mm-hmm. This is your, I think I'm reading from your mission
Text.
Statement.
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
but,
yes.
Which is beautiful. We believe the simple but profound act as a catalyst for personal healing as well as community education and prevention that corrects the many systemic misperception of cultic involvement. And I think it's amazing. You go on to say, we tell our stories, we change the world, healing, education, prevention. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because we talked to Mark and I feel like you know, once people get out of a cult or an abusive relationship, I think, you know, most people move on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or so they think. But
yeah.
there's still the scars and there's still that person left, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of, okay, so what are the signs of abuse? Not very often we don't know the signs of abuse. Very often we're indoctrinated to believe that these things are supposed to happen. These things happen because we did something to make it happen to us.
Yeah, it's our
we
fault.
Don't. Yeah, we often don't come from an education. If you grew up in a cult or didn't, you know, not everybody grows up with an education. But certainly, as you get older, you kind of have the idea that whatever happened to me is like done, and we need to just get our shit together and move on.
Mm-hmm.
I am not of that mind. I have continued to try to heal the little girl that was abused and indoctrinated into a cult. I'm very far from healed, but I continue to try to fix those parts, partly for me, but also because I don't want to fuck up my daughter that much. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. But I love what you're, I love this. I love this I got out because it's an important part of healing, if not the most important, is to talk about it. You know, when we get together, I don't know if you guys do the same thing. All
yes.
we're talking about is the shit that we used to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy when you're outside of it, but then you're kind of left by yourself. At night, mm-hmm. you know, after you wash your face and put your hair up, you're like, there's shame. There's a little bit of shame still connected to how did I believe that? How did I help? Why did I help? Why was I involved in this? So I think this is a very important part.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's so many layers. And actually, I was telling Mike, he said it's on his bookshelf of things to read. But this book,
yep.
Take Back Your Life, you've read it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm sure it's like the key one. I actually
yes.
Got myself a, well, Yanya, this is a very intense book. It's really long. And I said, this needs to be on Audible. And I'm currently recording the audio version for her. Because I wanted to reread it. And I
yes.
also thought, you know, for myself, I don't, I never even actually finished it because it was, I just can't, you know, it just doesn't have
yes.
time. I listened to books mostly.
Yeah.
But it reminded me even 3 years later, because I did read most of it when I first got out 3 years ago, just that it's, I think it's kind of a lifelong journey, you know,
yes.
like I think sometimes, oh, wow, I'm so healed. I go for a hike and I feel so good and I got my family. And then I find out so-and-so is still loyal to Keith and it breaks my heart and I go down the shame spiral for a day or two and mm-hmm. I think about what I could have done and how, you know, guilty I feel that I recruited her and she still believes in him. And and I have to call my therapist and right. I make an appointment. I literally have like a team, you know, a cult specialist and then a regular psychologist and then a couples counselor for Nippy and I. And, you know, I just gotta keep doing it. And I hate saying do the work because that was a NXIVM phrase.
Sure.
You know, you got to do the work.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck you. I'm not doing fucking work.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to do the fucking work. I know. That's the other thing, too. We like really are defensive about things just because it was a NXIVM thing or a Scientology. Right. I mean, if somebody tells me to stand behind a yellow line at the DMV, I'm like, or what? Or what the fuck is going to happen? Well, I'll tell you, you're not going to get help. I can tell you that. You're not going to get your fucking kid a license today. That's what's not going to happen. You know, but like, it's finding those triggers, right? And going, it's just a word.
So get this. In here, she talks about how like the triggers from your cult, right, can be triggers. Now, in our cult, the word trigger was used. So the word trigger is a fucking trigger.
Right.
She's like, write down all your triggers. I'm like, no, that's what I did for 12 years. I'm not writing down my fucking triggers. But I know what I have to work on with my therapist. Thank you. Thank you, Yanya. I'd rather say thank you, Yanya, than thank you, Vanguard, is what I'd rather say.
Exactly. Right. And Sarah, do you want to talk about the book? Like, what resonated with you? Because you said that was the first book that you read when you left, and you know, that's a big step in itself, right? Because we were taught anything outside of what we were learning or what we were taught, and this goes across any, you know, I'm learning that there's knowledges, right? There's not just one knowledge, and I'm always asking people, like, okay, I get that you believe in that, but are there other? Can you stretch beyond what you've been taught? Mm-hmm. From childhood to now, like you're saying these things as your beliefs, but are they really your beliefs? So what was the, because just reading the book was a step in the right direction, right? So that was a no-no in our lives.
Right.
But what was the thing that resonated with you that you could recommend to people who need to take back their lives?
Take them back, I think that the very first thing I got was, you can't just leave. You can't just walk away and say, oh, I was in a cult. Good to know. I'm going to go do something else. You have to educate yourself to figure out, A, how'd you get in? And like, how are you tricked? What vulnerabilities? And I say that with, you know, air quotes, because I think the vulnerabilities we have are very normal and human, like wanting more purpose and community and all those things. I don't think that's bad. But what were those things that they used to hook you so it doesn't happen again? Otherwise, you can very easily cult, you know, hop, right? Go from one to another. In fact, when I first met Yanya and a bunch of other survivors on an interview, I got this sense of like, oh my God, I found my people again and I have a new purpose. And then I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is the same feeling I had when I originally met everybody and Mark and the humanitarians and flying on plane. It was so glamorous and exciting. So I'm not doing this again. Because I still want to do that, but I can't jump in so quickly because that's my pattern, you know? So to know your pattern, know what pulls you, how you can be manipulated. I think that education is so important. And also my indoctrination in NXIVM was that therapy was bad, that therapists didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, obviously that it was a slow process. And that's actually one of the reasons why I like NXIVM so much, because it was so speedy and efficient.
Yeah.
You know, you could just get through stuff so quickly, it seemed. So even just going to a therapist and saying, okay, I trust that you are going to guide me through something that will be helpful was a big step.
Sure.
Education and then taking the steps to get back your life, which means like rewiring your whole belief system and, you know, learning how to trust again and figuring out, you know, I had to figure out who I spent my whole, you were even longer. And for me, even just my 30s, I was 28 I was 40 years old when I got out. And I was like, okay, what do I want to do now? I don't even know. I don't even know myself. I don't know my husband. Like, we never went on a honeymoon together.
Right.
You know, just like figuring out who we are outside of the rat race of the NXIVM stripe path, the equivalent of your bridge.
Right. And I was just talking to my therapist about that because, you know, and, Mike and I have talked about this many times, is that, you know, we're very much, when you're in something like this, we used to write reports and our husbands and wives and mothers and fathers and children send them to Scientology. Like, so we wouldn't like have, you know, relationship fights. We didn't, we just, because we were focused on doing the work, right? And so the relationship stuff was kind of insignificant and just kind of like, it was more of an annoyance, right? To have, you know, normal people problems. And that just wasn't, that just getting in the way. So oftentimes you're sent to Scientology to fix your husband. And you're like, just talk about it there. You know, just write a report on my husband and then send it to Scientology and they would fix him.
Right.
And or not fix him. They, you know, they tell me, be patient. He needs to do the work and he has done the work. And I was like, yeah, no shit. You know, just won't fucking do the work. And same thing. It's kind of like, and then being told what's wrong with you. Right. So you never get to work on what your, first of all, childhood trauma is an area that I'm really diving into now. Like that's like the next level. I've read a lot of books, doing a lot of therapy, but through real therapy was, okay, tell me about your childhood. And I was like, eh, that's not.
Yeah.
And she actually had me write down my story. Like as a, like, tell your story like you're telling me a story about another person. And then I would just go over things, you know, very quickly about abuse and about, you know, like really horrible abuse that I witnessed or experienced in Scientology. Wow. And she was like, oh, interesting how you just kind of, because in Scientology, and I think it's the same for you guys from what I've observed, it's just like, right, that's not the thing, right? You're, there's something else you're not confronting. And it's like, no, I'm telling you, my father was abusive. Yeah, yeah. But you were abusive in another lifetime. So that's, we don't want to hear what was done to you. Like, what did you do?
Oh my God.
Is the thing, right? So you
that
never-
makes my blood boil.
I know. But the thing is that you come out and you're, like you said, you're 40, you're 50, you're 60, and you're like, who the fuck am I? I've never dealt with any of the stuff that I, as a child, because they don't believe in that. They believe you're the cause of all of your pain and other lifetimes, and you're causing it, and you never get to deal with any of that. So you never, you're becoming a different person. You're becoming another version of yourself. And so when you leave, you're all of a sudden stuck together with a person you don't know. You've created a life with, and you're like, I don't know if I like you. Do you like me? I don't even know who the fuck I am. You know, it's a very interesting. Did you guys go through that, Mike? You and Christy?
Well, I met Christy after I left.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Bless you. Guys.
It would have been very different if Kathy had left with me and I was now creating a new life with the same wife that I had had for 30 years in Scientology.
Right.
That would have been strange.
Right.
I know, which is what
me and Sarah are in, right? Because we're like, hello. Nice to meet you.
We start our own support group. Just two of us. Better yet, our own cult. I mean,
there you go.
Everyone always says a good cult. Everyone says, like, why don't you do other, like, you were such a good coach. Why don't you like do your own thing? And I'm like, oh God, no. The whole industry, like the personal development industry that NXIVM was based on, just makes me want to barf. Like people that use the word goals or, you know, life coach. I'm just like, that talk about a trigger.
Yes.
You know, like it's so disingenuous. I'm sure there's great people out there. I just haven't figured out how to totally determine, which is actually kind of the point of the podcast, a little bit culty, is like, when does it go from a little bit culty to a cult?
Right.
You know, and how do you determine, like, okay, Lululemon is very, you know, that whole atmosphere when you go shopping and the whole corporate structure. Some people have said have worked there, not my experience, but it's a little bit culty. But okay, but what is that? Like they're just all obsessed with leggings. Like what's bad about that, really? Like I don't know.
Who is it hurting? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So figuring out who it's hurting, and like, you know, people have said you should do an episode on CrossFit, and you know, but there's so many things that are legitimate cults that haven't been exposed yet. Because like you said at the beginning, people aren't talking.
Right.
They're not. Oh, and so an answer to your other question, I tangent a lot. Don't mind my squirrel.
So do
mind.
I.
Okay, perfect.
You seem totally normal to me, Sarah. So Mike's completely fucking lost, but I get you 1,000%. Yeah.
Mike's like, where do I get in on this conversation?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's taking a nap at this point. Yeah.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mikey.
I'm still here.
Good. But go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, yeah. Just that another element of like after you've educated yourself, going back to the book for a second.
Sure.
Is writing. And I know you also wrote your own book, and I think that's very therapeutic, but then also activism and deciding to be, you know, to shine light, I think is really, really important and a huge part of my healing, and probably for you, especially if you're struggling with the shame and like responsibility of recruiting. And now you're on the other side trying to expose. It's a delicate balance too, because you can't, if you stay in that shame land, then that's partly what the cult wants you to feel, sure. Right? To feel yes. Shitty about yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is like ultimately the best thing we get to do on the silver lining side of getting to know ourselves is like, okay, we get to start again. I mean,
right.
Awesome.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. We have a chance.
Starting again, club.
Yes. We, and you know what? The fact that we can inspire people or be a shoulder for people, and it's very difficult to tell your story to every single person, right? Mm-hmm. And so people who have left NXIVM really look to you and Mark for help. They look for you to be consoled, but they don't want to tell their story to mm-hmm. every person they meet. It's difficult. It's not easy.
No.
Right? And so you kind of want to know that those people are there for you who get it, who understand, who know the lingo. You don't have to, you know, say, well, let me explain NXIVM, you know, like every minute. So mm-hmm. to be able to have you guys out there doing the work is so important and so admirable that you continue to do the work, because like I mentioned earlier, there are people that have left quietly your cult mm-hmm. as well Scientology, who just decided to take another road, which is, I don't want to be fair gamed. I don't want to mm-hmm. be attacked. I don't, but you know, that kind of leaves the rest of us kind of vulnerable having to do the work. We do it gladly, but at the same time, we're also healing. So like mm-hmm. somebody who leaves an abusive relationship, they meet another person and life is great and they get therapy, hopefully, and they heal those scars and they're never going to let that happen again. Whereas we've said, we're not just walking away, but we're going to make sure that nobody else gets hurt. And so we're constantly in the fucking toxic game of it still.
Yeah.
So we've never been able to, and it's by choice. Sure. I'll admit it's not like I'm playing a victim here.
No, I totally hear you.
But it does get to us sometimes when I'm like, there's some bigger fish than us mm-hmm. that could be doing the work that would greatly help the cause of
100%.
This, putting a stop to this. Yeah.
I it's like two hands. 100%. I agree. You know, I respect your decision for your
I
own
don't.
Process.
I respect it.
Yeah.
I don't respect
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know. Yes. But on the same side, fuck you for not supporting me. And I think it's okay to have both feelings in the same space.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, right, Sarah, that we're needing to learn is that not everything is black and white. It's not, you're either against us or if you're not for us, you're against us. I'm learning mm-hmm. that process too, which is the way cults work is you if you're not with us, you are our enemy and we will mm-hmm. go after you hardcore. Mm-hmm. And that's not always true, right? A few truths can be existing at the same time. I could mm-hmm. be pissed off that you're not doing the work, but also have compassion for you. Mm-hmm. I could also understand you and not understand, like all these things can mm-hmm. be true.
Yeah.
I don't hate you. I do have compassion. I have compassion for people who are in Scientology
yeah.
who are attacking us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between us, I think, between us and them is that they think that we don't deserve to actually be living.
No, I know.
I do not feel that way about them.
I agreed.
Yeah.
Because you've done the work.
Okay, one thought that I had way back earlier was, Sarah, when you were talking about the you know, a little bit culty, what's a cult, what isn't? One of the things that someone said to me one time that I thought was a very intelligent assessment of cults and cult behavior is the difference between a real religion and a cult is what happens to you after you leave.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That I would define there are a lot of organizations or things out there that have this sort of culty flavor to them or mm-hmm. culty bits. But the real rubber meets the road test is what happens when you say, I'm no longer part of this. Mm-hmm. Are you actually free to walk away? And mm-hmm. I and that goes both from the organizational perspective. Do they pursue you? Do they try and get you to sign NDAs? Do they try and get you to shut up and never speak about your experiences? Do they attack you, et cetera, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
And also, from a personal perspective, how are you now able to deal with life? Has it messed with your ability to actually live your life happily? Are you traumatized? Do you have PTSD? Do you have nightmares about the things that you experienced? You know, I think that that's a pretty good, a good measure of whether something truly is a cult or if they're just a little bit culty.
It's a really good measure. And I wish that I had dug into that when I was in. And unfortunately, in Keith's brilliance, even though he's obviously sociopathic, narcissistic, blah, 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 he is brilliant. Yeah. And he created this self-sealing system in which, you know, if I was in it still and said, "What? Okay, if you'd brought that to me, you know, what happens when you leave?" I'd say, well, people leave all the time, and which was true. People came and went. They did their thing. It was only a problem when people left who were being destructive. And so when you're in the mindset of the group, anytime you're saying anything negative, trying to take you down, expose something that happened, like we had multiple people leave when I was involved, including a big group of nine as exposed in the vow that they left in 2009. I had only been in 4 years, but I never even spoke to them because I was told that they were trying to destroy the company and that there was a case against them, and for legal reasons, I couldn't speak to them. And they were, of course, suppressive. Couldn't Keith come up with his own words like, for these people?
Oh,
like,
Sarah,
what a shyster.
Tara, I've got to tell you, reading your book, like I watched The Vow and Seduced, but reading your book, oh my God, I started making notes and underlining things of his similar terminology and concepts to Scientology. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I gave up because I was putting lines on every single page of your book, literally. And the ideas that are hammered in or that he hammered in are so identical to the not just the words, but the concepts. This idea of being at cause and being responsible and having responsibility for your own condition. And, you know, if you get run over by a car, how were you responsible for that? You know, this is something that is hammered in Scientology. And even down to he's the vanguard. Well, L. Ron Hubbard was Source. And you know, the adulation and the, and like I know that V Week is talked about in The Vow and even, and also in Seduce. But when I was reading your book, I went, you know, this is like the maiden voyage. This is where the top people of Scientology go to spend a week with David Miscavige aboard the Scientology ship Freewinds. And they're hobnobbing and they're applauding and standing up and adulation toward David Miscavige. If L. Ron Hubbard was alive, it would be him. This stuff is, and I think that this is going to be very interesting as you go along and explore this. And people like Janja Lalich and various others have done a huge amount of work in this field. But the similarities and the methods of control that exist between these cultic groups, when you actually start delving into them, they are so strikingly similar. And this is the pattern that works. The reason they're strikingly similar is because it works. It works to control people, to get people to do things against their better judgment and will.
It's a cookie cutter.
It is.
And also they, you know, I've been recently sending Michael tons of information about psychological warfare and how psychological warfare is used in cults, in religion. I mean, it's us against them. You have to set up and dehumanize the other side, which justifies killing people with you know, which is how the Holocaust happened, how systemic racism exists. It's all from this psychological warfare and dehumanization of the other side. And you always need the enemy, right? On the other side. We're the good guys and they're the bad guys. And so that is part and parcel. That is Scientology. There's thousands and thousands of pages you have to read that set up that mindset like you're talking about, Sarah, where you can't even, you think you can't even talk to somebody who is not human. Like, why would you talk to somebody who's evil? They're not human to us anymore. Mm-hmm. That's what justifies all of this horrible retaliation against the other side, right? You, me, Mike, and everybody who's spoken out. But can I just go back for a minute?
Sure.
Because for people who haven't seen The Vow or read your book, which they should, NXIVM, if you could just give a quick, it's not a sex cult, which people have debased Scientology, like, oh, it's the Tom Cruise cult, and it's the jumping on the couch cult. And it's like, no, it's none of those innocuous things, right? Not that a sex cult is innocuous, but it puts you in a defensive mode of like,
yes.
And I want people to know what NXIVM is and why somebody as smart as you are could get involved. And it's not because you're an idiot.
Thanks for saying that.
And you're welcome.
appreciate it. It's, you know, the sex cult thing is, it's a conundrum because in essence, it's sort of what needed to be exposed in order to get all the media and get the FBI involved and everything that happened after that. But it's so hard for people like myself who were, you know, I was high rank, but I wasn't part of the inner circle. So to be like, I was part of that it wasn't a sex cult. It was a personal development program.
Right.
Yes. It was, you know, similar to many other structures out there where you were working on yourself and building self-awareness with like-minded, goal-oriented humanitarians who wanted to make the world a better place to live, one person at a time, starting with yourself. Right. And, you know, after my first 5-day training, which was my first foray into NXIVM through executive success programs, which is the 5-day training. Yeah. I felt like I had been given this real gift of a clarity of everything that was happening in my life and with that of others in terms of communication and my own self-esteem, my relationship to my career or lack thereof, money, everything. I was like, I understand. I get it now. And I understand why I've been stuck and what I need to do to move forward. And I just wanted everyone I knew to have it. That same gift, burned a lot of bridges in those first few years, because I was such a zealot about it. Which is also part of the shame recovery because like I was so wrong about this, and people would be like, "Sounds a bit like a cult." Like, I get it, how it looks like that, and it might be a cult, but it's a cult of really happy, successful people, and I'm part of it, and you should too. It's great,
right? And if I'm brainwashed into believing that I'm happy, then so be it. I mean, yeah, right? That was my defense too. Yeah.
You can't really question that. And a lot of people that I know since, I've been like, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you do an intervention? They're like, well, you seemed happy and your life seemed to be working. And they're like, who am I to say that, you know? And I feel the same way about my friends here in Vancouver who I know are Scientologists.
Right.
You know, and I post stuff and I hope that they read it. But I'm like, what am I going to say? Like, okay, have you seen the aftermath? Like, have you watched that?
Well, the answer is no. They're not allowed to. Yes. They'll just say it's a lie. And if you ever ask any Scientologist or any cult person, like what specifically is a lie? Like that you can personally tell me that you saw was a lie. Was it when the young girl was telling her story about being raped by her own father? Is that what you're saying is a lie? Or that Scientologists don't believe children are actually children, but you know, spirits and older spirits and little bodies. What's a lie exactly? That families were destroyed? That you don't have a disconnection policy? That you believe that rapists and pedophiles will be fixed with Scientology technology? What's the part that you think is a lie? And they couldn't answer you, Sarah, because they don't watch it. They don't listen to it. They're not allowed to, just as you wouldn't, right?
No.
Just as when people said to you, do you know that Keith is a fucking liar, none of what he says about himself is true, you'd be like,
think that way, and that's how he's perceived because he's so noble and such an honorable man that he has a smear campaign against him, and sorry that you would believe that over me. I'm sorry for you
because you're in the unknown. Okay, you're in the unknown part, like you're just not you're not part of the elite group handling the fucking planet like we are, so go back to your little life of being in a bubble. Enjoy it while we do the fucking work. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
All great leaders and thought and people who've had new ideas and thoughts about society are met with.
Yes.
Exactly. We're just in that stage of haven't been accepted yet, but one day we will be.
Right, right. So
when everyone sees her. Oh yes.
So Nexium, I hope that we've established, was not a sex cult.
It
was really about, like you just said, it was about you thought you were handling it, getting your every area of your life to an optimum condition. Yes. And
exactly.
Yes, it was not sold. Yes, it wasn't sold as, hey, we're going to
put leader's initials on your crotch. No, no one ever said that to me.
No, that's not on the paperwork or on the pamphlet. Yeah, I don't think that's,
And by the way, I'm at the stage now where I can laugh about it. Maybe a year ago, that would have been a sensitive thing, but I have to because it's just part of my healing. Like Nippy and I laugh all the time about the absurdity of this whole situation.
Yes.
And Nippy says hi, by the way. He's a little jealous from here, but I'll
please send sends my
his love.
Love
and also
well, we'll say hello when we do your
perfect.
Podcast.
Yes. 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 But in terms of the sex cult thing, what I did have to come to terms with, however, is though even though it wasn't a sex cult from 99% of us, the shitty part is that it actually was a sex cult the whole time. It was just behind closed doors.
Right.
So it's a bit of a conundrum. Again, it's not black and white. No, it wasn't a sex cult for me. Yes, it was actually. I was a funnel to his harem. I was just recruiting fresh young women for him, unknowingly. And that's a huge ball of shit to unravel. Yes. You know, that's a terrible
metaphor,
but you get it. It's a hard one. And I still have friends that remain there. And that's actually one of the things you and Mark talked about that hit me. And I've been talking about to everyone who'll listen. You said to him, maybe it's better they stay there.
Yes.
Don't wake up. And I'd never considered that. I was like, because I don't know if they wake up, they may not be able to handle the world outside of their little prison that they've created for themselves.
No, it's scary. It's a scary world out here and not being told what to think, who to talk to, who not to talk to not know how to wash a window without looking at L. Ron Hubbard's writings on how to wash a window. I mean, it literally goes from how to have your baby, how to conceive your baby how to tell someone to exit their body at the end of their life and to pick up a new body so they can continue. Between there is literally what, you can't wear perfume. You could only do this. This is how you don't get into the implant station in the middle of your life and to the next life. Don't get implanted by the psychiatrist at the implant. Like it's actually literally I don't know what some Scientologists would do if they left. I can tell you that certain members of my family who have left have had a hard time adjusting and still believes in the tenets of Scientology, still believes in the technology, if you can call it that in quotes, of Scientology. It's very difficult for them to kind of live outside of those boundaries of thinking. And it's hard, and I have all but dropped it at this point because you know what, I go, if this is what makes this person happy and they're not hurting anyone, because within the organization you are, right? It's and I'm sure you've been asked this, Sarah. Like, well, isn't there anything good? That's like me saying that about an entryway drug. Like, I know what it leads to. Do you know what I mean? So no, I can't say that. So are there carrots that are dangled? In the beginning that, like you said, Sarah, it's not like, hey, we're going to brand your ass, hey, we're going to abuse the fuck out of you, Mike. And hey, Leah, we're going to groom you and every child in Scientology to accept abuse and to learn to be an abuser in life. Like, this is not on the paperwork.
Not on the paperwork.
But yeah, it's not on the brochure.
I will tell you one of the things, because I did that for a while, like just to throw everything out. And then I realized I spent so long there that the only things I keep in my toolbox are things that I can figure out where they came from originally, right? As long as a healthy person created
Sarah, it. Sarah, like, that was, yes, I started to go, I started doing this to my therapist. Yeah, but then how come this actually makes sense? Yeah. And I was that person. And I said, where's this data from? Because he couldn't have come up with this.
No.
And if he came up with it, then am I wrong that I would go through that? But because this actually makes sense. And she would actually start to give me resource information. She goes, that information is actually from this textbook. It's like Psychology 101, by the way.
Yes, a lot of it is Psychology 101, right?
Yeah, and it's antiquated maneuvers. Yeah. She's like, that shit was in the... She didn't say shit because she's much more...
refined.
She has class. She's very much unlike me.
This is the best conversation I've ever had.
I love you. But she would say this data is from this. This data is from that. And it's antiquated. It's from 1950. I suspect when L. Ron Hubbard was researching, how to rip things off, that's what he was looking at, right? The data that was available back then. Right. But things have evolved. Science has evolved. Therapy has evolved. Psychotherapy has evolved in so many ways. And that's just not here. And these practices that you're talking about are actually found to be quite harmful to the patient. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we stopped using those techniques, right? But I did the same thing as you, Sarah. I'm like, give me the data where it came from. Give me where it came from. And she goes, oh, you want the actual thing? I'm like, yep, I want to read about it. I want to see about it. I want to know. I want the knowledge. Because all my knowledge came from there. I didn't have an education. Most of us didn't.
There's two books I love. One of them's Tara Brach, Radical Acceptance.
Okay.
And she has some exercises in there, which I'm sure he stole from directly. Like, there's more Buddhist, Eastern sort of meditations and ways to kind of like, get out of your own way. I mean, it's all the same shit as the thing, right?
Well, I don't know. Scientology was not at all Buddhist.
Oh, was it
Buddhist
not that?
Okay. You weren't even allowed to do yoga. Not allowed to do yoga.
I wouldn't have made it very far because I'm obsessed.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do spiritual yoga. It's called mixing practices. You weren't allowed to do that stuff. You weren't allowed to go to church. These are people running around saying you could be a Christian, Scientologist, Catholic. You can be none of those things. I mean, this is how they got tax exemption, to say that they don't believe in anything but Scientology. So, they play both sides. But anyway, go back to what you were saying. Continue to interrupt you.
No, it's fine. I tangented with you, but I don't remember what I was
the
saying.
The second book. Right.
Yeah, the second book.
Two books.
Mm-hmm. That and, I just dabble in all these different things. Like, I have, and I'm trying to figure out what I want to keep. And, like, Eckhart Tolle has The New Earth, which I just started to reread. And the first thing he's talking about, like, looking at this rock and finding the magnificence in the rock. And I was like, that's an exercise on the last day of the training where you project your own magnificent essence onto a rock. And then if you can do that, you can find it anywhere, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, stole from Eckhart, which the book came out the year that the school started.
Interesting.
So I think you could actually probably trace, and for sure he took from Scientology. I've heard that rumor that he studied Scientology and really he created what was very much an unsuccessful, and by unsuccessful I mean that the numbers were low compared to Scientology.
Sure.
Right. And to circle back to what you said at the beginning of watching The Vow and being like, oh my God, they're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. We had a microcosm. Like, ours was what the government was able to do to expose him and sentence him and convict him and all those things, I hope is a template moving forward and can be used and referenced in legal structures to say, these are the specific abuses that happened, because up until the branding, it was very difficult for anyone to hold them accountable because emotional abuse is hard to pinpoint.
Sure.
Yes.
Right. And I know in your case, and you both know about physical abuse, but how to prove that and how to document and witnesses, there was so much physical proof and it was on my body.
Right.
Right. And that was something that I think made that leap in terms of what could happen in the legal system. So back to what you said at the beginning, I hope it brings hope for you guys that there, it might set legal precedence in the system. And I
hope
I will celebrate with you guys so hard that
day
comes crashing down. I will fly to LA, even if it's a pandemic.
Please, please.
In a hazmat suit, and we will drink champagne or whatever.
I will send you one. I will send you one. But because I found some really cute ones, Sarah. But I
did you really?
Yeah, no, because I had to Google. Like, I was like, there has to be something better than this suit, like, to travel. And I found, like, a Louis Vuitton one that I was very excited about.
Please do. I'd love to see that.
I don't even know if it's a real Louis, a real one, but it doesn't matter.
A Louis Vuitton hazmat suit?
Yeah, it had the LVs on it, that I found a Gucci one. It was like, pretty cool.
My God.
But anyway, yes, I think the difference is that Scientology has tax exemption, and so it's a little bit more difficult. However, where the government was successful was in raiding Scientology, because we are supposed to write everything down. Scientology has everything recorded and written down. And so we keep trying to say, you had a successful action, you should just repeat it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just the tax exemption. It's that tax exemption brings with it, at least in the United States, the ability to hide behind the First Amendment.
Right.
And use the First Amendment as a cloak and a shield to prevent government, you know, intrusion, as they like to call it, into their beliefs and practices. And it's funny, when you see Scientology appearing in court cases, they are in there talking about their scripture, and this scripture is binding on us to do X, Y, and Z, and you're not allowed to interpret it. We have to interpret it ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. And they come up with the most outlandish and ridiculous excuses, explanations, and justifications for things, and then tell courts, and you can't tell us that that's not true because that's our religious belief. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, courts fall for that all the time. And I know from experience dealing with the FBI and other law enforcement agencies that this is the fear or the barrier that they see as the biggest barrier to them. And I think it was the biggest mistake that Keith Raniere made was not calling himself a religion. He could have been a new messiah and called himself a religion. He would have gotten tax-exempt status. It's easy. You don't have to really do too much to get it as long as you haven't created any problems beforehand. Mm-hmm. And he would be probably not in prison. Because I watched, Sarah, some of the arguments or some of the statements that his lawyers were making. And those statements and arguments in his defense were the same arguments that Scientology makes about, you know, free will and people choosing to participate, et cetera, et cetera. And when you can put that outside the context of it's a religious belief, you have a much better chance of persuading a court and a jury and judges that it's not appropriate behavior. As soon as it becomes this was a religious activity, they all like run like scared rabbits for the hills.
Is there any way to undermine that precedent? Like that assumption that they are religious? Like, can you go in on that and pull that rug out that they're not? And that's just fucking bullshit? Or is that just, excuse my language, is that like, is that already been tried? If, excuse my ignorance, if it
well,
hasn't.
No, we keep working at it. I mean, that's what the IRS, we're getting into a sort of an odd discussion here, but in the United States, there's no such thing as an actual official governmental declaration that you are or are not a religion, because that itself violates the First Amendment. You shall make no law respecting the establishment, blah, 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 blah. However, what there is an IRS exemption, a 501c3 exemption for a religious organization, and that is a de facto granting of religious status by the only governmental agency that has any authority to do that in the United States. So what needs to happen is the IRS needs to revisit the exemption of Scientology organizations and undo it. Because as you probably saw in the aftermath, there is no question that the reason that Scientology was granted tax-exempt status in the face of a United States Supreme Court decision that says they are not tax-exempt is the fair game of the IRS. That Scientology effectively intimidated the IRS into granting tax-exempt status, so they should be ashamed of themselves and should be revisiting that. And there needs to be enough pressure brought on the IRS to do so. And that will start that process of undermining and yanking the rug out from under this defense that is used to shield everything that they do.
Right. Well, I really hope that day happens soon.
And yes, so do we.
If there's anything I can do to help, I don't know if I can.
Well, no, listen, sir, but... you, You guys are an example of what people can do who were involved, got out, and we have people, and I'm sure you've experienced this, where people have written you who were not involved in a cult, who were not involved in NXIVM, who said to you, or Mark, or Bonnie, or Catherine, your husband, you know, thank you, you gave me the strength to leave an abusive relationship, or thank you, yes, you gave me the strength to do something about my life, because through your stories, through your strength, they saw you were a group of people with, you didn't have lawyers at your discretion, high paid lawyer. It was just you guys saying, we have to do something about it. We have to get out. You started sharing information with each other, and with each other, you gained the strength to do something about it. And you put a criminal in prison, and no other women and no other men are going to be victims of this organization because of your strength and your continued strength, even when you don't feel strong.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know.
I might need to call you every now and then for that pep talk.
Listen.
Is it hard?
I know.
Yes, Sarah.
But it makes it worth it. You're right. Like, when those moments, like one person saying, or even better, recently someone wrote me, I was in a workshop, I just started it, and I had a funny feeling, and then I started watching The Vow, and I realized this group was a cult, and I got out. Right. But thank you, you know, for saving me from that.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God, it's so worth it. It's all worth it in the end, of course, it's just up and down, and it's a drain, and I'm, you know, finding the balance between being a good mom and, you know, yeah, and
it's hard.
It a savior complex, but I'm okay with that right now.
No, it's the
right thing to do.
Sarah,
right?
It's the thing. Yes, it's the thing inside of you that you wanted to make the world a better place. You wanted to change somebody's life for the better. That that has never left you. I mean, that's what got you in, but that's what also got you out. And you're still that person. You are that person. He didn't make you that person. It's not about being a savior or having a godplex. You're a good fucking person. And you give a shit about people. I don't give a fuck what your problem is. Like, I was in a store once and a girl was crying because the seamstress who was sewing her wedding dress was keeping her dress hostage, and she was calling her mother, who was in Texas, who couldn't help her. And I overheard it, and I was like, who's this fucking bitch? I'm getting your fucking wedding dress. I'll be your fucking mother. I'm going. Let's go.
Like, love that.
But I've always been that person. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me what the gripe is. Like, I want to be the person who somebody says thank you to. You know, like, I want to be the person who helps somebody get through their fucking day just because that makes me feel good, or that makes me feel like I've done something worth doing in a day. Like, I just don't feel right if I'm not helping. But at the same time, we have to find that place, like, where we go, we've done enough for today.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Watch a reality show, Sarah. Like, just let your minds get into a fucking Housewives or something. Like, get
Schitt's Creek was my
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Mine too.
Glass of wine, Sarah. Yep. Like, you know, we got to get in it. You got to, like, allow yourself to like, you've done something good today in that you know, made your sons happy. You've done something good today that you took care of Sarah. You know, like, these have to, we also need those people in our lives to say, just stop. Okay. Yeah. Give yourself time, but also understand that that's a part of you. Like, I've had to tell my husband, please, if I need to stay up till 4 a.m. with a friend, like, I need that space. Like, I need you to just allow me, like, that's what I have to do. And I'm sacrificing a lot tonight. Like, I'm not being the best wife. I'm not being the best mother, but that's my friend thing that I have to do for me. Like, I have to be a friend. I have to do something that fulfills my soul too, that does fulfill me. And for some, that doesn't mean a whole lot, but for me, it does. For you, it does. So
I feel like we might be the same person a little bit.
Yeah. We would have been trouble in cults together. Yeah.
You're like your book, like you're a troublemaker. I realize this about myself. I'm much more obedient on the outside. I'm not a troublemaker, but internally, I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Like I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do a penance. And I'm like, did my penance. Right. Fuck you. Right. I didn't do a lot of stuff that I was supposed to do. I was in Vancouver. Nobody was really checking up on me.
Right.
So
right.
I was like an inner troublemaker. So
right. You were really a good girl.
Everybody thought I was a good girl. I think it was so surprising when I left and I caught so much shit. They're like, what?
Yeah, that's the fighter.
From
Sarah?
There's
the fighter. Yeah, there's the fighter in you. But listen, to you, to Nippy, to Mark, to Catherine, to Bonnie, like you are an inspiration to a lot of us, to a lot of people, including me and Mike. And if you haven't seen The Vow, please, I implore people to watch The Vow, to read Sarah's book, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, The Cult That Bound My Life. She has a podcast called A Little Bit Culty. And what about the website for this movement? Do you have a website?
Yep, it's igotout.org. And we're just launching, and we're hoping that the hashtag igotout will take on a hashtag me too type of
love,
you know, storm, and that people will come out and share their stories from all different abusive contexts, but specifically cultic abusive relationships. Yeah.
I love it. And thank you for the work that you've done, that you will continue to do, Sarah, because I know that you will not stop.
Probably not.
Exactly. And we look forward to doing your podcast.
I can't wait. And I want to also end with the quick cheers to everybody's freedom. Please. Because we all got out. Salute.
Yes.
And
to everybody out there who have gotten out of cults and abusive relationships and horrible abusive jobs, who just get up and say, I'm changing my situation. It takes a lot of strength to do that, no matter what age. Please keep evolving. Please keep reading. And Sarah, I also want to mention some books to you.
Please do.
I think, Mike, have we listed those on our website? But
yes.
Specifically, I was reading The Search for Man's Meaning.
Man's Search for Meaning.
Thank you.
Yes.
Frankel, yes. And that really does help when I'm talking to people who have gotten out of cults and they think, you know, I've wasted my life. I wasted so much time. You know, when you read a book like that, it really does, you know, to search for the meaning of your pain, which is the work that you're doing, right? It gives purpose and meaning to your pain. It wasn't just for naught, you know, you, without Mark, without Bonnie, without Catherine, without the path that you guys had to take and to go through that pain is now availing you to help others to avoid it. And
turning,
so there is lots of
trauma.
Purpose.
Yes. Turning trauma into purpose has been our
exactly.
motto.
Exactly. Yes. Also the betrayal bond, waking the tiger, healing the trauma, Hardwiring Happiness is a great book. And I'll give you the rest of the list, Sarah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mike will, they'll give you my,
on the website for the blog, fairgamepodcast.com.
Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for all that you've done. And we look forward to talking to you guys soon.
Thank you so much for having me. That was the best.
Thanks, Sarah. Nice to see you again.